At the end of Parshas Noach, the Torah relates the tale of the Migdal Bavel, the tower that the men who had journeyed from the east attempted to build in Shinar. The Torah says, Vayomru ish shalot re'ehu, one man said to another, Rashi says one nation said to another, Hava nilbna levenim, let's make bricks, v'nistra falasrefa, v'tehilahem halavena la'oven, v'achemra ha'ilahem l'chomer, and they said, Hava nilbna lanu ir, let us build ourselves a city, umigdal v'roshu b'ashamayim, v'nasil anu shem, p'nofis al p'necha la'aretz. Hashem, of course, did not approve of this plan, and Hashem foiled it. It's remarkable, the Torah does not even say what they intended to do, what exactly their plan was, why Hashem did not like it. Chazal, most of the traditional commentators understand that it was some terrible avera. Well, Bag actually says it was not. It was simply an attempt to centralize humanity, to keep them all in one place so they could provide for mutual aid. And Hashem foiled it, not as a punishment, but simply because he felt that civilization's putting all its eggs in one basket is a bad idea. In any event, putting aside their goal, whether it was nefarious or not, a remarkable aspect of this tale is the cooperation. Throughout history, we hear of great things being done. We often hear of a king or an emperor or a great charismatic leader. Here there's nothing. One man said to another, one nation said to another. They just got together and they embarked on this stupendous project. This is an opportunity to discuss a problem which is faced by all social, economic systems, the problem of collective action and the related problem of free ridership. There are situations where a group of people, would all be better off if everyone cooperated to accomplish something, yet any one person has the temptation to be a free rider, to say, other people will need it too, other people will do it. I'll let them pay for it, I'll let them expend time, effort, money to accomplish something, and I'll benefit. That's the best case for me. How do we avoid this? If everyone would do this, nobody would pay. How can we ensure, A, that the thing gets done, and that everyone doesn't just wait for someone else to do it, and B, that how can we ensure fairness, that everyone participates fairly? This is an extremely complex and difficult question in the poskim, in halacha. We will discuss here some perspectives toward this question. We will begin with several gemaras that are widely cited by the poskim, and then proceed through a survey of the responsa literature on the topic. I note that I personally am quite fond of responsa literature in general, aside from the interest of seeing the halacha as it's developed, analyzed, dissected, and applied to real-world cases. Additionally, tshuvos give a fascinating perspective on the history of Klal Yisrael, the legal, political, social conditions. The series of tshuvos we will discuss today are particularly fascinating. Many of them are quite sensational, and all of them are interesting. We begin with three main gemaras that are widely cited by the poskim in this context. The first is a gemara in Bav Metzia, Daf Kuf Ches. Amar of Yehuda, Lekarye Denara, when the river has to be dug out, Tasoi Misai Eloi, the lower ones must help, must participate in combination with the upper ones. Eloi Lo Misai Tasoi, the upper ones need not participate with the lower ones. V'chilufa V'maya Demitra, the reverse applies to rainwater. What does this mean? Rashi explains that Kari Denara means that when the river gets clogged, stones and things block the flow of the water, and this river provides irrigation. So everyone downstream of the block is not getting his water because the water is blocked. Everyone downstream has a problem. So Tasoi Misai Loi, everyone below the block must participate with the upper ones because they all need this block to be removed. But on the other hand, Eloi Lamasai Tasai, those who are upstream of the blockage need not participate because, on the contrary, they're happy with the block. If the river's blocked downstream of them, it means more water for them. So they need not participate. And the reverse of Maya Demitra. Rashi explains Maya Demitra is a sort of drainage canal. When the water would fill up in the city, it would have to flow out through this canal. And if the canal would be blocked by tit and junk, and it would start to back up, so everyone upstream of the block has to participate. But those who are downstream, they have no problem. They say that if your sewer is blocked, we're getting less sewer water flowing through our part of the river, so we don't need help. So the basic principle is simple and easy to understand. Anyone who benefits from the project that's on the table must participate, must pay his fair share. Anyone who does not participate need not contribute. Tani Nami Hachi, the Mara brings a similar brisa. Chamesh Ginas and Mastapkas Mayim Imayan Echad, five gardens which are all supplied with water from one spring. Kulam Mataknas Imayelyona. Nimsa Tachtona Matakanas Imkulan, the lower one will have to participate in clearing any point of the river. It's all upstream of him. Umasakanas La'atzma. And the same thing, the sewer, the reverse case. Chamesh Chatzerish and Mekalchas Mayim Lebiv Echad, five houses that share a sewer line and they're in serial, one upstream from the next. Miskalkil Habiv, the sewer is damaged. Kulam Mataknas Imatachtona. They must all help the lower one because they all need that lower part of the sewer cleared. This is the first Gemara, simple concept. All those who are deemed to be in need of the prospective project must contribute toward it. All those who are not in need need not do so. Second Gemara, Mishnah in Bava Basra and Daf Zayin, Perek HaShutfin, Kofinos or Livnos Beis Shar Videlos L'Chatzer. Members of a chatzer, a courtyard, can compel each other to build a guard hut, a door. Rav Shimon Galil says, Lo kol chatzer is ruis l'beis shar. That's a technical problem. Also, kofinos to livnos le'er. Residents of a city can compel each other to build chomad, l'sayim, uvriach, walls, doors, bolts to keep the, to secure the city. Rav Shimon Galil again says, Lo kol yar is ruis l'choma. Not every city needs a wall. The basic principle, though, putting Rabbi Shimon Galil's technical dissent aside, is that when there are multiple residents of a courtyard or multiple residents of a city, they can all compel each other to pay their fair share toward the construction that everyone needs. The third Gemara is the Gemara Bava Kamma, Daf Chaf, in the famous sugya of Zeh Nen of Azeh Lo Chaser. The Gemara says, brings a Mishnah, Tnan, Hamakiv Chavera Mishalosh Ruchosa V'Gadarash Rishonim Eseshniya V'Eseshlishis. There are two neighbors. One of them builds walls, and his walls almost surround his neighbor. They surround his neighbor on all three sides, providing some benefit to the neighbor, but not much, because the fourth side is still open. Ein mechayvenosa, haravi is mechayvenosa. If he builds all four walls, then he has the right to charge the neighbor. He can say, I fully fenced in your property, and that's a benefit to you. So the Mara says, Shmami no zen of zelo chaser chayev. Why can he charge him? This is considered zen nen of zelo chaser, because where the assumption here is that the outer neighbor needs the walls too. So he built it for himself. And incidentally, he benefited the inner one. So that should depend on the machlokas, on the question of Zeh Nen of Azeh Lo Chaser, I benefit, but you haven't lost. So Mara says, no, this is called Zeh Chaser because at garamta li akefa yisera, your property caused my fence to have to be larger. There are different shatim and rishonim here. We're not going to get into that. Then the Mara says, the other way around, that if it was amad nika fagadra servius, if the second neighbor did the fourth one, then he has to pay Hamakiv Pater, that's Rabbi Yossi Shita. He disagrees with the Tanakama. He says that if the other neighbor would do all four, he'd be Pater. The Mara says that Lachar is Zenem, Zel Lachasir is Pater. The Mara says, no, that's not a raya in that direction either, because he could say, L'didi Sagalib Natira Barzuzi. I don't need a fence. Fences are nice, especially when they're on all four sides, but I don't need one. I could have been satisfied with a cheaper, less elaborate bit of construction. So the Mara seems to say that putting aside the Svara of Hakefa Yisera and putting aside the question of Lidisagili with something less, the basic question, if I build a fence and it benefits my neighbor, and I built it for my own purposes, but it does happen to benefit my neighbor, the Mara seems to say that this depends on the Machlok Zaposkim of Zeh Nen of Azeh Lo Chaser. And the Ikar LaHalacha, the Pashtus anyway, the Ikar LaHalacha is that we paskin Zeh Nen of Azeh Lo Chaser is Pater. So this Gemara would seem to indicate that if one neighbor built a fence, even though the other one benefits from it, the other neighbor can decline to pay and say Zeh Nen of Azeh Lo Chaser. Now it's important to realize that our question, free ridership and collective action, our question actually comprises two components. The first question is ab initio l'chatchila, if we both need something, can I compel you to pay your fair share? The second half of the question is, assuming I did not wait for you to participate, I went ahead and I expended the resources to do whatever needs to be done. Now, ex post facto, b'di'evit, I want to charge you, can I do so? The first two Gemaras we quoted about the members of a city or a courtyard compelling each other to build stuff, the Gemara about clearing the river, both of them seem to be talking about l'chatchila. Can one person force another to join him in some endeavor? The last Gemara, the Gemara in Bava Kamma about the fencing, seems to be talking about b'di'evit. After he put up the fourth wall, does he have the right to charge him. And a very simple reading of these three Gemaras might indicate that l'chatchila, if they both need something, one can force the other to join him. B'di'eved, it depends on the question of zenen of zela chaser, and he cannot. And indeed, we will see that there are poskim who make this distinction. There are also others, though, who disagree, and they explain why these Gemaras do not contradict each other in other ways. Turning now to some of the tshuvas of the Rishonim, there are four central tshuvas of the Rishonim that we need to discuss. All of them are cited by the Ramban, Shulchan Aruch, and Chasam Mishpat in various places. The first is a tshuva of the Marik. Marik was talking about a case where the Jewish communities, various places in Germany, it sounds like, were running into major trouble with the government. Tfisas Achenu, our brethren were being seized, kidnapped, held for ransom. So the ground zero for this problem seems to have been in Regensburg. But there was a concern that the problem was going to spread to other communities. Nuremberg was one of the other ones mentioned. So Regensburg had an immediate problem. They had to pay money right away to avert this problem. We're going to see various tshuvas in the course of this lecture that discuss paying the government to avoid problems. Sometimes this can be construed as lobbying, sometimes out-and-out bribery, sometimes just paying to buy friends, call it what you will. But this is going to be an example discussed by a number of poskim. In Marik's case, it was essential. There was great danger going on here. It was essential that they pay off the appropriate people to get out of this danger. Regensburg, who needed to pay right away, wanted everyone else to contribute. Everyone else, for whom the danger was still off in the future, wasn't as immediate, may not have been quite as certain, was apparently a little more reluctant to pay. So the Marik in Sharash Dalet says, everyone must pay. All the kehilos who are deemed to be in danger, even eventual danger, must contribute. Kol osim ha-kehilos esheroi lachshov v'karov levadei. Anyone who, in our judgment, probably will, and almost certainly will, chas v'shalom shegam aleihem hayaover kos ha-tereila, they too will experience this cup of tragedy. Im lo hayadavar demesukun, if we don't take care of this, all of them must contribute. They all must help Regensburg pay this money. The salvation of Regensburg is their salvation. Hatzalas Regensburg, hi hatzalasam, v'nepach, v'hepach, chas v'shalom. They must all contribute. And he brings a raya from the Gemara of the river in Bav Metzia. And he notes the case of the sewer, he says. There also, he says, it's not immediate. If downstream the sewer backs up, I'm not immediately going to have my toilet overflowing. Eventually, the obstruction will make its way upriver, and eventually I'll have a problem. My problem is not right now. You're the one who has a problem. Downstream, his sewer is overflowing. I eventually will have trouble. Nevertheless, Marik says, it doesn't make a difference. I can't just say, let the downstream guy take care of it. He has the immediate pressing problem, and I'll benefit from it after the fact. No, since inevitably, if nothing is done, the problem will befall me too. The downstream guy has the right to demand that I help him also with the blockage. Therefore, here too, he says, Regensburg, even though they have the immediate and most pressing problem, they have the right to expect everyone to participate and pay their fair share in averting this catastrophe. This is brought by the Ramah in Simon Kuf Samach Gimel, Sivvav. Next, we have two tshuvas of a Marami Rattenberg, Maram Bar Baruch. Both of them are dealing with cases where the non-Jews, the government, seized property or persons of separate people. In the first tshuva, there was property, assets belonging to Reuven and Shimon, and the government seized them. And one of the people settled, paid off the governmental official, the local duke or baron, whoever he was, paid him off to give the property back. He turned to the other guy and asked him to pay his share. He said, no, you had an interest here too. You did it. You did it. And I benefited. Incidentally, I don't want to pay you. Maram says, no, you have to pay. Ein lo el scharo. He only gets his fair schar, but he is entitled to something because he did benefit his friend. Second shuv in the Maram. This one, Reuven and Shimon themselves were seized by the government, and they had to pay money to escape, bribes, ransom, whatever it was. He says, absolutely, he has to pay. He brings, the Gemara says, if a person says, even though Shimon said, don't pay money for me, I'll take care of it, I'll work it out, don't worry, the halacha is no, just like a person who says, al tikbrei mi nechasav, a person leaves a will and says, don't bury me for my own property, let the community bury me. I'll take care of it somehow. I'll worry about it. Ain't shaman lo, because lav kol hemenu shiyasher es bano v'yat lashmo latzibur. He has no right to do this. He has no right to free ride off other people. That's why he says it's different from the Gemara and Bava Kamma about the fencing. Because there he says, the person has the right to say, I don't need a fence. I don't want a fence. I don't need a fence. Animals will get in. Robbers will get in. That's my problem. Mind your own business. You can't force me to build a fence. Harry says a person has no right to force the community to take care of him. So here the people have the right to lay out the money and then demand compensation from the other people. He brings the Gemara Bava Basra, Kofim Bnei Ha'er, anything which is in unarguable need for multiple people. Any one of them has the right to force the other ones to pay his fair share. And he says, you don't say Kofim Midas Dom, you let out the money, you benefited me, so that's Zenev Zelachas. He says, no, Im lo hayinu Kofim Kol Echad, Kol Echad Yomer Ein Tzarech. If one couldn't force the other, everyone would say, I don't need it, my nerves are better than yours, I'll play chicken, you'll do it, I'll benefit from you. That can't be, he says. Yidcha Davar, if that would happen, the solution would just be pushed off. Yavlu de Sakana, things would actually get pretty dangerous. Lahachi Achbar Abban Aleilu, these things which are essential and necessary for the community, or for his case, where the two people were languishing in a dungeon of some nobleman, one has the right to lay out the money and then demand compensation from the other. Fourth tshuva is a halachic ruling of Rav Yechiel of Paris, cited in the Shulte Giborim, on the Mordechai and Baba Kama. There were Sfarim, books, for Kodesh probably. The Sfarim needed to be saved. It's not clear exactly what they needed to be saved from. Probably, again, the non-Jews. So one person spent some money to save his Sfarim. So he says, if he, through the saving of his Sfarim, also saved the Sfarim of another person, he cannot collect from the other person. He says, if he knew about the other person's svarim and intended to save them, then he could charge him. Aval hachi, he says, niskaven l'tro patela svarav. His focus, his purpose was only to save his own svarim. Eino yadua matal sifre chavero. He didn't know anything about his friend's svarim. Therefore, we say, mishamai rachimu alei. The other person got lucky. Heaven smiled on him. And therefore, he cannot charge the person whose svarim he saved for the benefit that he caused him. This tshuva is very different from the first three. The first three all said that the person who laid out money can charge. Regensburg can force Nuremberg. The Reuven can force Shimon in the Maram's cases. Here, Rav Yechiel of Paris says that the person who saved the Sfarim cannot charge the other person. We will see various explanations in the poskim for why this is so. All four of these halachas, the two tshuvas in the Maram, Rav Yechiel of Paris and Marik, pretty much are all brought in the Ramah. And Kuf Samach Gimel is the Marik. And then the Ramah brings some kind of composite set of decisions based on the Marams and the Shulte Giborim in Siman Reish Samach Dalad, Sif Dalad. So now we'll discuss some of the tshuvas of the later Achronim, how they ruled also, and practical cases before them, and how they understood this ruling of the Ramah, how they reconciled the various early tshuvas, and which of them are lahalacha. So one of the most lurid and dramatic tshuvas we will discuss is in the Taras Emes of Aaron Sasson. Reuven was apparently a rich and influential and powerful official of the king somewhere in Turkey. And one of Reuven's jobs was that when there were nichse retushin, abandoned property, mishein leyarshim, Reuven was entitled to the property. One day a ship foundered on the seashore. Reuven and his people came and they grabbed the property. There was apparently lots of rich merchandise, valuables. Turned out, it seems, many things in the tshuva are not very clear, but it turned out this was unfortunately money from the royal treasury. There were royal officials on the ship. The king became very unhappy. The king began to send messengers down to Reuven to tell him to give back all the property immediately, and anyone who took property from Reuven must give it back. Reuven thought he could just buy off the right people, so he began to disperse funds to make the whole thing go away. But that's not what happened. The thing got worse and worse. Eventually, Reuven was clapped into jail and tortured. Reuven was solid. Reuven refused to give anybody up. Reuven was Amad Taimo Bo Levilti Higish Nitfluim Yehudim Klal. He refused to name any names. He was tortured for this. As a matter of fact, the Taras Emes says that Reuven, who was actually a somewhat important official, and they were going relatively easy on him, when they tortured Reuven, they were pretty careful, it says. When they hung Reuven up and they beat him, they put people underneath him to make sure he didn't actually get hurt. Like, we all know that when you torture people, you have doctors to make sure that you don't go too far. So, Kibabayim Lahakos says Reuven and Iskar Tlauhu Samu Beis Anashim Tachtov. They put two people under him to make sure Lahachinoso Lasado to support him Kadesh Layuzak Achpanafsho to make sure he might have been hurt but not killed. Other people who were tortured were virtually killed, and had not Reuven spent even more money getting them all out, they would have all been in trouble. So basically, at the end of the day, Reuven spent lots and lots of money and got them all off. Reuven then turned to the other people who were involved in this sad affair and wanted them to contribute their fair share. They said no. They said, you needed to pay the money anyway. You were in trouble yourself. We were hanging on your coattails. We got saved because of you, but you didn't do it for us. You did it for yourself. Why should we pay? Zenen v'zelo chaser. So Taras Emes at length rules that they must pay. He says clearly there's no way they would have gotten out without Reuven's money. He brings the Gemara's, the Gemara HaMakabel about the river. He brings the Gemara about the Bnei Ha'er, about people forcing each other to build things for the chaser, things for the air. He doesn't seem to distinguish between Lechatchil and Bediavad. He brings both these Gemaras, and it seems to assume that even after the fact that Reuven had already laid out the money, Reuven still had the right to demand that they pay their fair share. One guy in particular he mentions was really in a lot of trouble. He had apparently cut the finger off one of the corpses of the ship in order to seize a ring from the person's hand. This person he cut the ring off was a Difterdar. Don't know what that is exactly, but it sounds like it was somebody important. And the Maras HaSson, the Taras Emes, repeatedly says, if that rumor was true, if they caught him for doing that, he would have been in really, really big trouble. Basically, he applies the Gemaras we've seen earlier. He says, of course, they are Chayev. He absolutely saved their life, saved them from a terrible fate. And certainly they have to pay their fair share. And they cannot say that Reuven had to do it anyway for himself. No, they have to pay their share toward their salvation. The Beis Yaakov, the Chuvas Beis Yaakov of Zusmir, he raises a stira. He thinks that the ruling of Rabbi Yechiel of Paris and the ruling of Maran Bar Baruch are irreconcilable. He says, Rabbi Yechiel of Paris says, that if a person saves his own svarim and incidentally saved other people's svarim, the other people need not pay him, because he would have had to do the same thing to save his own svarim. But Maram says, in Maram's case too, the person in jail had to pay the same money. The ransom wasn't set $10 ahead. There was one ransom and the king would release everyone. So even if he wanted to go free himself, he still would have had to pay the same ransom. And nevertheless, the Maram says that absolutely they all must participate, they all must contribute toward the ransom. So he says that the Maram and Rabbi Yechiel of Paris are irreconcilable. They are two conflicting opinions. And he has a kasha on the Ramah, he says, because the Ramah seems to have paskined both of these rulings. The Ramah paskins Rabbi Yechiel of Paris' din. He says, L'chein yesh misha pasak, misha hitzel svarav v'sifrei chavero, and lo hutzruch laharbos atzos b'shvilo. If there was no additional cost for the other person's svarim, ein chaver chayav l'shalom lo klum, the other person need not contribute, because that's zenen of zelo chaser. But earlier, the Ramah seems to have ruled, like the Maram in the case of the captives. He says that if a person redeemed, well, first the Ramah says that if it's lo hutzruch laharbos batzos b'shvilo in the case of the captives, ein chayav l'shalom lo klum, zenen of zelo chaser. But elsewhere, first the Ramah brings Marik, as we mentioned earlier, and even here he says, "Dafka diyar tchil lahatzel shelo el shetel gamkin shel chavero imo." If the person's entire goal was to redeem his own, and the other one came accidentally, then he's potter. Avlum yard al dash nehen chayav litzel lamashenena, machshati shel chavero koshin isbar. If he initially did it al dash nehem for the purpose of benefiting both, then the other person has to pay mashenena. Now, it would seem that that was what the Maram meant, that that was the case of the Maram. The reason the Maram said that the other person has to pay, the other captive has to pay his fair share toward the ransom is because the one who paid the money did it all dash nehem, and there's no contradiction whatsoever between the rulings of the Marik and the Maram and that of the Rabbi Yechiel of Paris. But nevertheless, the Beis Yaakov did not understand it like this. The Beis Yaakov understands that in the case of Bnei Ha'er or the Bnei HaChatzer or the river where there's a joint action, they all need to do it, and one of them does it on behalf of all of them, that's called Al Dash Neim. Beis Yaakov seems to have understood that in the case of the Maram, that was not considered Al Dash Neim. The guy who paid the ransom was somehow only doing it on his own behalf. I don't really understand why he says that. And other Akharim also seems to have trouble with Beis Yaakov. The Shvus Yaakov, we're going to discuss soon, calls it Dvarim Muravavim, mixed up things. Nevertheless, the Beis Yaakov seems to feel that the case of the Maram was not considered Al Dash Neim, and still the Maram said Chayev, and he doesn't understand the Ramah. How can the Ramah simply paskin that unless it was Al-Dash Nehem, your potter, where the Maram, he says, clearly says Chayev, even in a case where it was not Al-Dash Nehem? This is in the Beis Yaakov and Simon Kuf Mem Ches. The Nesivus does not seem to distinguish between L'chatchil and B'dievet, as we've seen in the Maras HaSson, Rav Aaron Sasson's Taras Emes, but he makes a very interesting distinction, a different distinction. He says, yes, it's true, he says, we see in the Gemara of Kofim Bnei Ha'er that anything that two people unquestionably need, either one can force the other one l'chatchila to pay. And he seems to understand that that would be true even b'di'evit, even after the fact, if one of them lay out the money for the Beis Shaar or for the city wall, he can then turn around and compel the other one to pay his fair share. B'davar ha'muchrach l'shneihem kofinet zeh zeh, b'hed yitzan kofim rebeka. They can force each other to do things. So why, he says, in the case of the fencing in the Gemara Bava Kamma, where one neighbor built a fence, can other neighbors say, zenen of zeh lo chaser? Why is that? So he says, shamhu davar she'ena muchrach, desagilim n'tir bar zuza. La'alach, he says, the only reason the neighbor can decline to pay is only because he can say, I don't need it. Saglim and Tiro Barzuza. I can get by with a makeshift, cheaper form of security. But otherwise, you would not say Zenav Zeh L'Chaser even after the fact. In other words, he takes the Gemaras that say that L'Chatchila, the members of the city or the Chatzar, can force each other to pay for things they jointly need, and he assumes even B'diavad the same thing is true unless there's a Tainam and Tiro Barzuza, unless he can say, I don't really need it. You felt you need it. I don't feel I need it. He says also that's what you see in the Gemara of the River, that anyone can force the other one to do what they need. And even B'diavad seems to hold that would be the din. So then he brings the din of Shnayim Shenitfasu. Two people are captured. The Ramah Paskin, that if he didn't spend any money, he doesn't have to pay his fair share. If he didn't spend extra money for his friend need not pay anything. His friend has the right to freeload. And that clearly is something he needs. He can't say, I didn't need it. Everyone needs to get out of jail. So we already saw there's a distinction many of the poskim are going to make between dashnam and not dashnam. Some are going to argue that the Ramo is only exempting him if it was not al dashnam. And the case of Bnei Ha'er and the river were al dashnam. The Nesivus, again, doesn't seem to be aware of this distinction right now. He seems to think that the Shita, that patters even in a case where it was al dashnam. So what's the difference between the cases of the river and the cases of the members of the city or the courtyard where they have the right to force each other l'chatchila to pay, and even B'diavad seems to assume? And why in the case where two captives need to pay a ransom and one pays, why does the other one have the right to freeload and say, I'm not paying my fair share? So he says, a very interesting distinction, Sham Mairi, Shalom Nitfasu al Inyan Echad, they were not both captured for the same crime or for the same issue that the ruler had. They're unconnected. Either one can solve his problem without the other one. So even though one of them paid money and got both of them out, since there's no real connection between them, the other one has the right to freeload. When they have both been seized for the same matter, then they have the right to force each other l'chatchila, and he assumes hu adin b'di'eved. And the same thing applies in the case of the Sfarim. The Sivus says this twice, once in Kufayin Ches, again, the end of Kufayin Ches, again in Simurei Shem Lechdala on the Ramah, that it depends whether their fates are linked and whether they're independent. There's a tshuva in the Emuna Shmuel, or Shmuel Kedenover. His point is that if the freeloader initially protested and said, don't do this, don't do it on my behalf, I'm not interested in paying, I'm not joining you, he has the right to do so. His case was a zoning issue. The Moshel, the ruler, passed a new rule that said no house may contain more than two hoyslot, more than two householders, shnei balabatim. Many people wanted to rent out their house to multiple householders. Reuven and Shimon, who were such landlords, they had multiple householders in their houses, they wanted to lobby. They wanted to pay lots of money to the government to rescind this rule. So they told the community, let's pool our money together, let's get this revoked. The community said, no, we're very happy like this. We like the zoning rule. We think that the population density is too high. We think it'll be a great thing if no one is allowed to have more than two householders in a house. Reuven and Shimon didn't care. They let out the money anyway. Then they turned around and said, okay, you know, I benefited all of you. All of you now have the right to have more householders, pay me. They said, what are you talking about? We think this is a bad thing. We told you not to do this. Why on earth should we pay you? He says that they are correct. They need not pay. Since they initially protested and said, we don't need it, we don't want it, they don't have to pay, he says. And he brings the Shilta Yibarim or Bechiel of Paris, that if one guy did it on his own, other people don't have to pay him. This is Mamish de Kavasei, the exact same thing. They needed to do this on their own. And the other guys protested, therefore they do not have to pay. Even if they do benefit the other people, even though they protested, they might actually turn around, and now that the law has passed, actually take advantage and rent out the house to multiple people and get increased rents. So even though they did, he says, actually benefit the rest of the community, it makes no difference because that was not their intention. He seems to assume that just like in the case of Rabbi Vechiel of Paris, where the other the other, where the person who paid the money to save the Sfarim didn't do it on behalf of the other person because he didn't know about the other person, so to her, Reuven and Shimon cannot be said to have done this on behalf of the community because the community said no. So even if they benefited, just like in the case of the Chiel of Paris, the owner of the other Sfarim benefited, since it was not done on their behalf, in this case, in Munna Shmuel's case, because they said no, they need not pay. Pshita, pshita, they don't have to pay, he says, even if they benefit afterwards for this reason. But then he backtracks in the last paragraph and says, Kol zenirli shenach jekivin ladina lahalacha miikra din. But he says, if people see that Reuven and Shimon meant well and did indeed benefit everyone, for all the kehilos and the kol is protesting kavanaso chas v'shalom lachisan, this is some kind of personal vendetta they have with Reuven and Shimon, but they were just playing games. Really, this is something they wanted and needed all along. Then he says, the dying can do whatever he wants. Al pira ose nainov, that's the dying's right. Ein la dying la shein of ros. This is in the Munna Shmuel, Simon Lam and Vav. But he basically accepts Rabbi Chiel of Paris' ruling that any time they cannot be said to have been acting on behalf of other people, in his case because other people protested, or in Rabbi Chiel of Paris' case because they didn't know about them, then they have no right to charge the other person, even if it turns out after the fact that they unquestionably benefited the other people. Tshuva in the Shvus Yaakov, brought by the Pesach Tshuva, as was the previous Beis Yaakov, Pesach Tshuva and Reishis Lachdalet. Shvus Yaakov's case was a great fire in Prague, in the year Tuf Mem Tes, 1689, I guess. And as the fire was spreading from house to house, there was a three-story building, and when one of the residents saw what was going on, he tore off the roof. The idea seems to have been that the walls of the house were often stone or sturdier timber. They were not quite as flammable, but the roofs were often thatched. They would catch fire like a torch. So the safest thing to do was rip off the roof to avoid the fire spreading, and sure enough, it worked. Nitzel Abayis. So the one who had done this was the owner of the third story. He then sued in Beistin the owners of the lower stories to pay the share in rebuilding the roof. And they said, no, why should we? You tore off the roof for your own benefit as much as ours. You would have to do it for your own sake, even independent of us, to save your story of the house. And we benefited incidentally. So why should we have to contribute anything to your costs? So he brings the Marik, that normally everyone has to contribute their fair share. Brings the Munna Shmuel. He asks the Stephen and the Ramah. He says that the Ramah accepts the Marik, that in the cases of Nuremberg and Regensburg, they all have to contribute. Yet the Ramah paskins, like the case of Rabbi Chiel of Paris and the Sfarim, that the other people don't have to contribute. And he says the chiluk is, the cases of the Maram, that if one person, the Maram says if one person laid out money, they all have to pay, he says. But the distinction is, he says, that something which is negeh l'chlal ha-tzibur, when it's negeh an entire tzibur, or even in the case of the Maram, he says, where it was relevant to life and death, two people were rotting away in jail, at least the second shuv of the Maram. Then he says, in order that it shouldn't be a keder d'bei shutfi, things which are serious collective action problems, because it depends on the entire community cooperating, v'yavu l'disakonas tzibur, that's why they all have to pay. Masha Enkin, he says, B'yachid, ha-medayin ha-miyachid, when the dispute is between two individuals, then we apply the rule of Zeno Zelo Chaser. If you lay out the money, and you did it for your own sake, and I benefit incidentally, I do not have to pay, and that's the case, those are the cases where we say Potter. So he says, Mel Ladina, in his case of the fire, he says, it's a simple case of two yechidim. He seems to have assumed that there were no lives at stake here, it was just a question of property damage. Therefore, it's a simple case of yachid and yachid, and if one person laid out the money and the other person benefits, in this case, it sounds like he's assuming even if it was al dashnehem, because the guy who tore off his roof, he knew that the other guy's house he'd be saving also. So clearly this would seem to be al dashnehem. Still, he seems to hold that he has no right to demand that the other guy contribute, because the Maram and the Marik were special dinim in the cases of Tzibur or of the Tekanas Nefashos. But a simple financial dispute between two parties, if one laid out the money, he cannot force the other one to pay his fair share. Now we turn to a rather entertaining, somewhat provocative tshuva of the Bnei Aaron, Rav Aaron LaPapa. By way of introduction, it's important to understand that this was a different society. I don't recommend anyone do what they do in this tshuva today. As we've seen, they were dealing with societies where the government threw people in jail, tortured people, killed people. Just to survive, you have to be pretty ruthless. By way of that introduction, Rav Aaron LaPapa was talking about a case where various Jews owed money to a non-Jew. The non-Jew died. Reuven, one of the debtors approached the executor of the dead non-Jew's estate and said, here's a bribe, take this cash, go to his account book, tear out the page with my name on it, and give it to me. Fine. Guy took the bribe, tore out the page, gave it to Reuven. Reuven is very happy. He can now write off his obligation to pay this debt. Reuven walks home with his paper in his pocket. He pulls it out. He sees on the other side of the page there are other Jews' debts written there. Now they're all off the hook. So he promptly goes to them and says, pay your fair share of the bribe. They say, no, nothing doing. You didn't know about us. You didn't do it on our behalf. You did it solely for your own self-interest. We happen to benefit. Mishmayehu drachim, we don't want to pay. We admit that we're benefiting, but we don't need to pay because of that. Not your affair. So Rav Aaron LaPapa has three tshuvas on this, four tshuvas, two of his own, two of other rabbanim. Initially, Siman Tazayin in his tshuvas, then Mem Gimel, Mem Dal, Mem Hey. And the Bnei Aaron himself, Rav Aaron LaPapa, ruled Potter. He basically ruled, Zenev Zelo Chaser. It's exactly the din he says over the Chiel of Paris. Just like there, one person saves Sfarim belonging to another person, but since that was not his intention, he didn't even know about the Sfarim, he has no right to charge after the fact. The other person, therefore, has the right to freeload and not pay anything. So too, Harry says, when he initially paid the bribe to the executor, the other Jews involved, he didn't know about them, he wasn't acting on their behalf, therefore, they do not need to pay, and he's just out the money on his own. There's a tshuva in the Yad Eliyahu, Rav Eliyahu of Lublin, Siman Ayin Gimel. Also a sort of zoning issue, as we saw before in the Emunah Shmuel. In his case, the Jews lived normally in the city, and then Rishei Ha'er, Ha'arelim, the bad non-Jews, he says, changed the rules. They persuaded the government to ban Jews from the city center. Lo yaduru od be'emtza makom berachov. They can't live in a normal central part of the city. They have to live in side streets, makom shein regel anash metzuyim sham. Nobody liked this. So the one person made great effort, meaning he paid a lot of money, to get this decree rescinded. He wanted the other Jews to pay their fair share toward his costs. So he discusses much of the literature that we've seen until now. He says that anything that they both need, he has the right to be Tovea even after the fact. And he says, basically, Shaper Chavero Chayav L'Shalom L'Lofi Erech. Why is it fair that you should benefit from my money? Why is it fair that the other members of the community should benefit from his costs? The halacha is, a person has no right to save himself at someone else's expense. He says, I have to save both of us. He says, if I'm parecho v'shel chavero, if I volunteer and help you out, then the poskim say I can't charge you. If I pay off your chav, it's a big sugya, major machlok za poskim, but at least in certain cases, I have no right to charge you. Here, he says, that's because who asked me to get involved? I don't have to go pay off your debts. He says, but here, I have to do it for my own benefit. It's a mitzvah for me to save you, and I have to do it because my own fate is at stake here. So it's not fair, he says, for you to freeload off me. He said, if the other guy would have done it, I would have had to pay him. Now that I did it, you have to pay me. So even if the other guy protests, he says, makes no difference. He says, Ene roach b'takana zuklal, doesn't make a difference. He says, as long as we know for a certainty that you're just trying to take advantage. When you say no, you really mean that you just want to wait till I do it, but you really need it. You can't do that, he says. You certainly have to pay. You still have to pay. Ein lahat lasim amun chavero. You have no right to save yourself with my money. Unless, he says, imlo shebe emes lo nechalev lo ichpad levet dekano v'shtad lazu. Unless he really doesn't care, he really doesn't mind moving out to the outskirts of the city, then that's like Netirus Barzuzi. But as long as he certainly does need it, he can't simply say, I don't want to pay, and I'm going to freeload off you. It doesn't work like that. Then he brings the Rechila Paris' in. He says, certainly, if when the guy spent the money, he didn't know about the other guy, and he didn't act on his behalf, and the other guy just benefited incidentally, then he'll be Potter. Because that's like Zachem and Ahefker. That's not called I saved myself from your money. That's called I was Zachem and Ahefker, because you didn't spend the money for me. But in any case, where I knew about you, and I intended to spend the money for you, and we were both in danger, then you have no right to freeload. And as long as you certainly needed it, you must pay me. You must pay me for my share. The Nodeb Yehuda has a very famous tshuva, a much-quoted tshuva, in Madura Tinyana Chashon Mishpat Chelik Beis, Madura Tinyana Chashon Mishpat Simon Chav Dalad. It was a dispute between a printer and his client. The client was an author, had composed a commentary on Seder Nizakin, and another Seder, and he hired Shimon, a printer, to print his sefer for a set fee per daf. This is the arrangement that today we call vanity publishing. Unlike the more common or contemporary arrangement where the publisher buys the rights, he sells it, and he keeps the profits and pays some set amount, royalties, and a set fee to the creator. In this case, the creator was paying for the cost of the printing, and the printer charged whatever he did, and the customer would then sell his book for whatever he could. So the customer wanted the Gemara to be printed with the Gemara in the center of the page, and the top of the page, and his commentary underneath. He wanted the Gemara, Rashi, and Tosfos, and his commentary below them. So normally, he says, printers, after they print each plate, each page, they were dealing with physical, old-fashioned type, the immovable type. They would then remove the type from the plates in order to reuse the type to set the next page. This printer had lots of type, lots of spare type, so he left the plate set up. He had other plates and other type. And afterward, he decided, hey, I already have these plates all set up. I already paid for all this typesetting. What I'll do is, I'll print my own Gemara without this fellow's commentary, and I'll sell regular Gemaras. The creator was not too pleased about this. It would compete with his own Shas, and he felt that he had paid for all this work. Why should the printer be allowed to freeload off his work? He wanted the printer to be forced, if he intended to use the plates that he had commissioned, he wanted the printer to be forced to pay him to kick back some of the money that he had paid for the setting up of these plates. The counter-argument was that it was Allah Chasser. What's Allah? So the initial point in Rabbi Yehuda is it depends what their arrangement was. If the customer simply paid a flat fee, said, I need Gemaras, print me the Gemaras with my commentary and all the internal arrangements, how much to pay for the printer, how much to the typesetter, how much for this guy, how much for that guy, was all the printer's internal affair. Then he says the customer has no claim to these plates. The plates are entirely the property of the printer, and the customer has no claim at all, and there's nothing to talk about, he says. If, however, the printer would send an itemized bill to the customer, he would say, this is how much it costs for the press, this is how much it costs for the typesetters, and the customer would be charged these individual fees, which the printer would then pass along to the individual operators. Then he says the customer does have some ownership interest in these plates. And then there is what to talk about. He says then we can analyze whether he has the right to charge the printer for using, quote unquote, his plates. Now this assumption itself is a highly debatable one. The Baruch Tam, or Baruch Tumim Frankel, contests this vigorously. He says, Ma'od Niflam Devarav. He says, what chus does the customer have in the plates? He says, his arrangement with the printer was, you print. You have no ownership interest in the plates he set up. He says, let's say he needs to hire a wagon driver. So he says, you don't have a wagon? All right, I'll give you the money you need to buy a new wagon. So you buy the wagon, and you make sure you get my merchandise across the road. So now the wagon driver says, okay, I'll use the wagon for my own needs too. He says, the customer has no claim on the wagon. It's not his wagon. The fact that the other guy charged him for buying a wagon, he says, doesn't mean that he has any ownership interest in the wagon. Any of the internal byproducts of the provider has acquired or constructed to do his job is not the affair of the customer, even if he's being charged an itemized fee, he says. So he rejects the entire assumption of the Rabbi Yehuda that the customer has any interest whatsoever in the plates. But assuming he does. So we still have an issue of Zenem Zelach Aser, because the printer is saying, what do you care what I do with your plates? You don't need these plates. You're not going to do anything with them. So why can I use them? So the Yehuda has a long tshuva discussing the various arguments here. And he brings the Gemara of the river. The river and the sewer, where the principle is that anyone who benefits from the project of clearing an obstruction has to contribute. Now the Yehuda says, our case is different. We don't say that since the printer benefited from the typesetting, he has to pay his share toward the typesetting. It's different from the river. Why? And he says, unlike the implication of the Taras Emes, unlike the implication of the Nesivos, that there's no difference between Lechatchila and B'dieved, that once they have the right ab initio, that they can all force each other to contribute. Who had in B'dieved, if one laid out the money, he can force the other one to pay after the fact. The Nabita says no. He says, in the river, he says, all we ever see is that up front, if one guy says, you help me pay for the river, he has the right to force the downstream or the upstream neighbors to do so. However, he says, if one of them went ahead and already paid for the clearing of the river, he says, we don't find anywhere that he has the right to force his neighbors to contribute anything toward the money he laid out. That, he says, is classic Zenem Zelach Aser. He has to do it for himself anyway, and he has no right to force them to contribute their share. However, he says, there is a stratagem he can employ. He says, the guy who did the clearing can say, all right, you don't want to pay? Okay. Oshuv l'kalkal mashadikanti. I'm going to undo everything I did. I'm going to throw the stuff back in the water. Esta masha chafarti. I'm going to stuff up that which I dug out. Gamli gamlach lo yeh. Nobody will have the river. That he has the right to do, he says. And he can extort money from them. He can basically charge them protection. He can say, you don't want to pay for the money I spent in the river? Nobody will have the river then. He says, l'char, that's kofnal midastom. What right do I have to stuff up the river, which is a completely unproductive action, has no meaning except for the purpose of extortion, and has no legitimate justification except my desire to extort money from you? He says, no, since what I want to do is force you to help me pay for the money I laid out, that's considered a productive purpose, a legitimate purpose. I want to get you to pay for the money that I spent. My way to do that is by threatening to stuff up the river. That is fine. Both these latter claims in the Rabbi Yehuda also are strongly rejected by the Marshag. Marshag in his Tshuvas and Chelik Beis and Kuf Chav Dalet, Marshag says both these things are absolutely wrong. He says, first of all, he says, the Rabbi Yehuda's claim that the entire discussion of the river is only lechatchila, whether we can force them to contribute up front, but after the fact, the neighbors can say, we never agreed, you did it for yourself, we're not paying you. He says that's not true. He says certainly the stimas hashas v'shulchan aruch, the implication of the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch is that since lechatchila they all have to do it, even b'di'eved, he has the right to make him pay, which is also the implication we've seen from other achronim. Similarly, he says in the case of the fencing, we see the same thing, that even after the fact, there's a din of forcing the neighbor to pay. I assume he means, like the Nesiva said, that as long as there's no excuse of l'disagim turis barzuzi, as long as the neighbor can't say, I don't need a fence, then even b'di'eved, he has to pay. And the Hezbollah is like the Nesiva, said anything that they all needed up front, the fact that one of them jumped the gun and did it doesn't mean that he loses the right to ask the other one to contribute. And he says also in Rabbi Yehuda Svara, if we do accept Rabbi Yehuda Svara, that after the fact I can't make you pay, he says, then Rabbi Yehuda's claim that he can still get him to pay by threatening to stuff it up again, he says, that is certainly perverse. He says, that's certainly wrong. That is classic midastom. A person has no right to do it. Dover Tema, he says, that's exactly midastom. He says, we don't find, every time Chazal said midastom, we don't find that the desire to extort money legitimizes midastom. For example, he doesn't bring this, but for example, there's a comment in the Erech Shai. He says, in the sugya of Yardlum Neschavero, illegitimate, unfair competition, in many cases, a competing business is allowed to open, even if it will cause harm to the first business. It's a free market, it's a free country. Everyone has the right to try to make a living. However, the Erech Shai says, that's only if I want to open up and I have a legitimate, profitable business plan. He says, if my business plan is simply to sell at a loss, and I have no intention of making money, and my whole goal is to hurt you, he says, certainly because I have a grudge against you, he says, I certainly can't do that. Even, he says, if my goal is simply to extort protection money from you, I tell you, look, I'm going to open up a store. I'm not going to make any money, but neither are you. So unless you agree to pay me off, I'm going to do this. He says, that's also Asur, he says. That's still midastom. He says, the fact that I have a purpose to extort money does not legitimize midastom. And that's essentially what Marshag is asking against Rabbi Yehuda. Once an action inherently has no financial meaning, has no legitimate financial purpose, the fact that I do have a purpose, my purpose is to extort money, that does not remove the label of midastom, and it remains Asur. Marshag's case himself is an interesting case. He was talking about Reuven hired a karon, which traditionally means wagon, but in this case, Marshag explains it was an agala shel mesilas habarzel. Apparently, he had rented a train car, a rail car, to send merchandise. He only had enough, though, to fill half the car. So someone else put merchandise down. He allowed someone else to fill up the remaining half of his car with merchandise. I guess they didn't stipulate up front what the compensation arrangements would be. After the fact, Reuven said, pay half the cost of the car. Shimon said, no, zenav zela chaser. Your cost to the rail line is fixed regardless of whether you fill up your car or not. You needed to fill up the car for your own business independent of me. You rented the car before I came on the scene. So that is classic zenav zela chaser. You didn't spend any money on behalf of me, so why should I pay you? So the Marshag says, no. Marshag says that he is chayef to pay. Based on the principle of Yard al Dashneim, we've already seen various poskim say, based on the language of the Ramah, that the whole reason Rabbi Chila Paris says Zenam Zelachasr in the case of the Svarim, the whole reason that the party who laid out the money cannot collect from the other party is because he didn't know about the other party, he didn't do it on his behalf, and the other party benefited completely, accidentally, and incidentally, he says, here, no, this is called Yard al Das Chavero. Even though he didn't know about Chavero, the other merchant came on the scene only afterward, he has a great chiddush. This is still called Yard al Dashneim. Why? Harim Meisim B'chol Yom, A person who rents a wagon, a train car, to carry some quantity of merchandise, Machashia Belibo, he thinks, hopefully, Shema Yizdami Nod, Misha Yirtz Lahalach B'Derek Zeh. Maybe I'll be lucky, I'll find someone else who needs to send merchandise on the same journey. Eizah Schara, Yisrael B'Shmuli Hagala. Da'af Shein Abar Lo, she is Damin. He certainly can't be sure someone will do this. He's willing to spend the money regardless. Mikomakam, he says, Nichnas K'tash L'Beis HaSafik Shema Yizdami Lo. He does hope, he is thinking maybe somebody will need it. So he says, this is called Yarel Dashneim. A non-sad day that if he has another Shutuf, he would want the other person to help him. So clearly this is called Yarel Dashneim. And therefore he has to pay. This is a very common scenario. Somebody rents a car to travel from Lakewood to New York. And he needs to go to the Chasna anyway. So he would rent the car on his own. But he's hoping that he'll find other people, and other people will pay for the help him pay for the cost of the car. Now, even though if he didn't find people, he would rent anyway, and other people didn't come till afterward, this is exactly the case of the Marshag. That he's thinking, hopefully I'll find somebody else, and the other person therefore cannot say, Zenem Zelo Chaser, you rented the car anyway. He can say, no, I rented the car hoping I would find someone like you who needs to pay also. And therefore, you should pay me your fair share toward the cost of the car rental. Another tshuva, similar type of tshuva, is in the Divrei Malkiel. A fascinating case. This is Chela Gimel, Simon Kufnun Zayin. Reuven developed a formula to sell Mayim Mesukim Umarichim, sweet, fragrant waters. The Hisigri Shayin Alzeh, he got a permit, a license, from the Beis Maatzos HaRefuah, the health ministry in Warsaw. Polish health ministry in Warsaw. They gave him a permit. I don't know if it was safe or if it was effective or if it was good value for the money. They gave some kind of endorsement, some kind of permit for the sale and marketing of this product. And of course, he says, move on. This cost lots of effort. Today we would say it cost money in terms of clinical trials, lobbying, bribes, who knows what. Whatever it was, obviously, he says, this cost lots of money. Reuven printed out special labels, which are called etiketin, tickets of some sort. And these labels had the permit on them and his name. Now, someone had a great idea. Another fellow said, I'll make the same water, same formula. I'll stick on these labels saying Ministry of Health in Warsaw, and I'll market the same thing. Reuven was not pleased. Reuven said, I spent money getting this permit. I paid for this. Why should you freeload off my efforts? He wanted him to either stop marketing it or at the very least to pay his share toward the cost of obtaining these permits. So the Divrei Malkiel also invokes the idea of shutfus. Even though this was after the fact, he says, the second guy did not come on the scene till after Reuven had had these expenditures. Nevertheless, he says, the rule is, kol hecha sheyesh eza hotzohu pu'ulo shemashutfus batov shnei anashim. Anytime, like the Nesiva says, anytime there's a situation where collective action is desirable, where we both benefit from joint action. Harayim shutfin bedaver, the kofin zezeh, just like the din of members of a courtyard or a city, compelling each other to build fences, and Baba Kama and Baba Basri says, as long as it's necessary and that's the custom, either one can force the other to contribute. He says, otherwise, he says, other guy can say, I don't need it. If it's something which is considered a luxury or superfluous, which people don't necessarily do, then he doesn't have to pay. And that's the idea of Nisirus Barzuzi, or the case of the fencing, where he could say, I don't need a fence, so I don't have to pay. He says here, since Shimon, the second producer, clearly was interested in these labels, he was spending money and producing the water on his own, making his own labels, he's clearly interested in a commercial enterprise selling this product with these labels. So that indicates that it clearly was something he needed, and it's Mamash HaShutfus, he says, and Reuven therefore has the right to force him to contribute his fair share toward the initial cost of obtaining these permits. What happened, he said, to the din of Zenev Zelo Chaser being Pater? That's only, he says, because in those cases you can say, Lo Gila Dato Denech Lebotza. As we explained, the guy can say, I don't need a fence. Also, he says, you have the Nesivas. If it's not Nitfasu El Inyan Echad, if they're not sitting in jail for the same purpose, even and their fates are independent, even if one person spent the money and saved both, since they're independent, That's not considered a case of shutfus, and he cannot force the other one to pay. But any time that there is something we both need together, even if I let out the money, even after the fact, I can force you to pay. Even though, he says, in our case, the other guy was not there yet at all. Shimon, the second producer, may not have even had the idea yet at all to produce his competing version of the product. He says, it makes no difference. Zayno, he says, Big Chiddush, Atu B'makif and Nika, from the case of the fences, Lo Iri Bamin Vitsavashlo Nekale Bekefo. There also he says the Pashas is, he says, we're talking about a case where the neighbor at the time says he didn't need a fence, and only afterwards said, okay, I do have benefit from this fence. Like in the case of the Muna Shmuel. He's in that case too, he's still chayav. That's still called shurtfis, he says. Even though the idea was not yet in his mind, he had no plans yet to do this, and he only changed his mind and decided to do it afterwards. Still, once retroactively we see that he needed it and he plans to use it and he benefits from it, that is considered shurtfis, and he has the right to force him to pay. I always wondered how far to take this. Let's say we have three automakers. One of them lobbies the EPA to relax emission standards, and that benefits all of us. Can I then turn around and say, okay, now you have to pay me for the cost of the lobbying. We all needed it. Anything I do which benefits you, what about a car company that didn't even open yet? 20 years down the line, I open a new car company, and now I benefit from the reduced standards. Can I turn around and say, well, now that you benefited from it and you're making cars, now I can charge you? Seems like a tremendous chiddush. But that is what he says. We should point out, though, even the Nadabi Yehuda, who said that if one guy cleared the river and then the other guy decided to use the cleared river, the first guy cannot charge him, Nadabi Yehuda does seem to say that's only if the second guy was not actually planning on farming at the time the river was cleared and only changed his mind afterwards opportunistically and decided, now that I have a river, now I'll farm. Nadabi Yehuda does seem to imply that if the farmer always planned on farming and he simply was being obstinate, like the Lashon of the Poskim L'Hachisa, or to deliberately trying to freeload, there is an indication from the Yehuda's language that even he would agree that he has no right to freeload, and even b'di'eved, he would have to pay, just that he was talking about a case like the Divrei Malkiel, where he had no intention of using the river until after it was cleared. Then the Divrei Malkiel says it's still a din of shutfis, and he can still force him to pay. In that case, the Yehuda seems to say, That's the case for the Rebbe Yehuda says that after the fact he cannot charge him because that is Zenana, Zelo Chaser.